Big Red Revival.
Nebraska stays undefeated at home and moves their record to 2-2 with a victory Saturday, 28-14 over Louisiana Tech, protecting that home field, undefeated at home. And we got to what we've been always talking about, a good old-fashioned win streak. That's two in a row for the Huskers, granted against a little lesser opponents. But, you know, at this stage in time, a win is a win for this program. So it wasn't necessarily the most beautiful thing we've ever seen in the world. But, you know, like I said, we're just chasing W's and that's it. You know, by my old favorite saying, by hook or by crook, you know. So Nebraska gets the win, moves to 2-2 and sets up, you know, a big game with number two Michigan coming into town this weekend for the very much hyped Bussin' with the Boys Bowl. So that's exciting. Barstool coming into town this week. A lot of good things happening. And apparently a heat wave also going to be all of 92 degrees. So, Zach, what's happening? How you doing?
I mean, first I'll say it's been way too long to not hear by hook or by crook from you. So it's good to have that little throwback and you know, pull that tool out of your tool case. But let's just do the people a little favor here going into this podcast, and let's just eliminate all conversation about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift and about Deion Sanders, because I've heard about enough about those three people in the last 2 weeks.
Gonna make me start hating T Swift, man.
Yeah, it's like, Jesus. Joe, let's just breeze right over those conversations for this podcast and let everyone else just kind of drown themselves in it, because I've just heard too much. But like you said, yeah, it felt good to get a win at home. It was not pretty. It was the weirdest weather delay I've ever seen in a game. And you know, it was kind of hard to like relocate the game on TV after that weather delay took place. But you know, it's neither here nor there. It's always good to see us get a win, get back to 500, and essentially start the, you know, the second third of the season.
Right. Yep. Yeah. We're at the quarter pole of the season already. So, you know, maybe, you know, you kind of maybe like that Minnesota game back, but, you know, 2-2 and you're just thinking, okay, well, with the way the rest of the Big Ten West has looked, you know, you're just thinking, okay, I just got to go 500, you know, here on out to, you know, get to bowl eligibility. And I don't think anybody's really, you know, banking on, you know, us beating Michigan this week, but you know, you want to go out there and have a good showing and, you know, work on some things and get some things correct. And then, you know, like I said, the season's still wide open. A lot of things still on the table. So, you know, we finally got to see, you know, Nebraska have a bell cow in the backfield. Anthony Grant, with obviously the two starting running backs going down last week, Ramir and Gabe Irvin, you figured you were going to see a healthy dose of Anthony Grant, and we did. 22 carries, 135, and a touchdown. I was a little alarmed they didn't pull him out there at the end, you know, once the game was in hand, and they kept having him out there running. I'm like, come on, man, get him up out of there, you know, fuck around, get your ankle twisted up or something, and then we're really in trouble, because, you know, we thought maybe we'd see those freshman running backs, but the limited action we did see of them, they didn't look like they were ready for the big show. So I think it's going to be basically a one pony race back there, Anthony Grant, and then obviously heavy QB run. So, you know, Nebraska, you know, kind of lulled us all to sleep in the first half, second half, you know, third quarter, midway through the fourth quarter, really kind of started to impose their will, ended up racking up over 300 yards rushing. You know, Anthony Grant did his thing. Double H. It's too hard for me to say Heinrich Harbert.
It's too much.
I'm going to have to get him a nickname. So, yeah, Double H.
Eat a spoonful of peanut butter and then try it, too.
Exactly.
That'd be even worse.
They need to get him, you know, one of those NIL deals with that. Do you guys have H&H, the dealership down there in Lincoln?
Yep.
With those fake fucking twins on there that apparently aren't just even twins.
Any burger place so that you can name it the Harburger.
See, now you're thinking. Now you're thinking. You know what? I did cop that Jeff Sims meal probably three or four times already, though.
Yeah.
now that
I would say RIP, but apparently it's still there.
There was rumors that it was
a lot of confusion in the branding there for a couple days, but I think they felt bad for the kid.
Yeah, they're like, go ahead and put it back up. So
yeah,
but no, what'd you see out there from the team on Saturday? Obviously, it wasn't pretty, but you know, you kind of look at the final numbers offensively, and it kind of looked like what you're hoping for, at least, you know, high rushing yards, 150 passing. I guess the surprising part was that the defense finally didn't look great. We had more missed tackles on Saturday than we've probably had in the entire season combined. So defense gave up not big plays, just you know, just the plays that they had been making all season. You know, shutting down the rush. And, you know, getting the guys to the ground immediately, not missing tackles. So I guess what was your kind of overall perspective of what you saw Saturday?
Yeah, and I think a little bit of that is kind of contributed to the pace at which they play. I know that Colorado does the same thing, but there was probably a little bit more adrenaline and emotion in that game as opposed to this one, where we kind of had the intention and understanding that we were probably going to come away with a win here and maybe took them a little bit lightly. But, you know, they had some ball players on their team. I mean, you know, Smoke Harris, that guy's body confused me because he looked like he had like a beer belly, but he was just like, he was
super agile. You know,
getting all over the field and doing a lot of things in their offense. Right. So, I was very impressed with him and had heard, you know, that was basically, you know, the name that stuck out in any of their, scouting reports coming into this game. But, you know, we talked about in the preseason how, you know, this might be a little bit, you know, I don't know, slower type of offense, more ground and pound. And, you know, they are just as boring of an offense as I can remember Nebraska having for a long time.
It's
kind of frustrating to watch at times, but I know that, you know, if we try and do anything more than what we're doing now, it's going to get ugly like it did early in the year. So I can appreciate them kind of staying the course and, you know, with two guys eclipsing 100 yards in Harburg and Anthony Grant, you know, that's always good to see, but doesn't seem like there's a lot of help behind that. Emmett Johnson only had two carries for 6 yards. And I think there's a little bit of not panic, but just, you know, proactive moving around of positions where they're putting Fleeks back, or a running back, which he played in high school. So maybe just to add a little bit of depth since he wasn't seeing much clock on the receiving end. But and then the defense looked, you know, somewhat pedestrian, you know, mainly in the passing game, just because they were, you know, they threw 42 passes, but still held him again to 46 rushing yards, which is what our average was going into the year. So I think that's still a very impressive
stat.
That's
still number 2 in the country as far as.
Yeah, number 2 in the – is it number 2 or number 1 in the country? But it's number 1 in the Big Ten for sure. So we're going to need that. We're going to need that type of defensive performance going into Michigan with Blake Corum coming to town, because that guy is not Jacob Fields, 6 carries, 28 yards from Louisiana Tech. So
yeah, he's going to get a little bit more loose than that for sure.
Yeah, and I don't want to say we match up well to Michigan because I think they're just better at everything. But
Michigan's the team we wish we were. Yeah, Michigan is the team we're striving, like how they play.
100%. I thought that same thing today, actually.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's honestly my favorite style of football. You know, I'm not one of these guys that likes to, you know, have wide receivers out by the sidelines, spreading the field out, using every, you know, blade of grass out there. You know, I like the style of football Michigan plays. You know, run the ball, take some shots. You know, like they have a little QB run game in it. McCarthy, you know, he's not a running quarterback, but he can run. Two good running backs, you know, good offensive line. I mean, the exact way, you know, Michigan is built is what Nebraska's trying to build. Not, you know, not saying we're ever going to be the number 2 team in the country again, but just that style of team is what, you know, Nebraska's striving for. Just kind of like, you know, pro team too. It's like 49ers, like they're a run first, you know, play action, take a couple shots, like play strong defense and run the ball. You know, it's a good recipe for winning football games, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's having a well-established identity. And that's what you get with, you know, a coach that's been there for a while and consistent recruiting and just, you know, a good backing from the entire university. And that's what Michigan has. And that's what, you know, again, that's what we wish we had. And we're striving to be, but you know, we're a ways off and we'll see that Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. And it, like I said, it's recruiting to your identity. You know, it's right now he's trying to, you know, score peg round hole. And you know, I guess I was listening to the Omaha, the 1620 guys talk today, and they're kind of talking about, Matt Rhule's kind of just demeanor and, body language, from the beginning of the season to where he's at right now. And just, you know, they're just, I guess, trying to dissect it, you know, midweek small talk of what, you know, what's going on, what we're looking at here. But, you know, once they started talking about it, kind of, you know, he was, before the season, it was, you know, he was real uppity and cheery and whatnot. And now he just kind of seems, I don't know. I don't know if it's that, you know, they were kind of pinning on that, you know, he has a real connection with Ramir Johnson, and, you know, this might be, Ramir Johnson's career might be over, you know, with football, and have a real close relationship with him, and just how bad the offense has actually looked. You know, I guess, and then they are bringing up, you know, the fact that the offensive line play and the fact that, you know, the media keeps asking about Teddy Prochazka and, like, you know, when's he get in there? And, you know, it feels like that he doesn't think Teddy Prochazka is, you know, a starter, you know, healthy or not healthy, which is absolutely crazy because, you know, I had talked about how bad old Piper's been this season. Turner Cochran, I mean, he's as bad as it gets. He's as bad as player at that position as there is in college football. You know, your eyeballs tell you it. The Pro Football Focus grades tell you it. So it's just, I don't know. It's what, I guess, what do you think of Rhule and his kind of demeanor? And do you see a little shift in his body language? And maybe you're thinking, oh, and also, you know, he brought his quarterback in, Jeff Sims, that, you know, is basically no longer playing. I guess, what do you think of the whole body language and his demeanor right now? Do you see a change in it, or what do you think it could be?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's just like any other player. You know, you've gone through fall camp, which was a month. You're four games in. You haven't had that early bye week like we had last week. And I mean, I think there's probably just a little bit of fatigue in there too. You know, yeah. I mean, coaches spend more time in the film room and in the facilities than even the players do, because, you know, that's ultimately their job, and the players are student athletes. So they get out and they, you know, they are able to, you know, mingle with other students and go to classes and stuff and kind of just, like, you know, kind of change the scenery. But the coaches live and breathe it 24/7. And it's not like he's not been through it. But, you know, Nebraska's a different monster.
Dude, it's so a different animal here, man. It's official, you know.
And I think, you know, he's probably done enough of his research where he's pretty strategic in what he says to the media. Yeah. He's well-spoken, obviously, but he's not shunning them or anything. He's given them good answers. He's given them, like, educated, you know, answers, not just doing what Frost did or Bo Pelini did and just kind of waving them off. And
Or Bo, like, what'd you see out there?
Yeah, what'd you see? It's like, it's like, well, we need your input here. You're the head coach, you know, that's kind of what you signed up for. But I think that there's a little bit of that in there. Like you said, I think maybe, you know, there's a little bit of the thought in the back of everyone's mind, would be nice to have that Minnesota game back, because 3-1 is a hell of a lot better than 2-2 at this point.
Feeling a lot better about the season for sure.
But, you know, this is, again, this is his first year here. He's getting his feet wet. And I think, you know, that he's handled it well. You know, I don't think, you know, there's been any, like, major hiccups for the most part, but I think, you know, more so than not, I think it's just a little bit of fatigue. And then as far as the offensive line too, it's like, yeah, Turner Corcoran, he's not getting the job done. I will say Ben Hart is very much improved.
Hey, Benny, yeah. You know what? He's been so good that I haven't heard his name one time, and I haven't noticed him one time, which is exactly what you want out of your offensive lineman.
And I love that after you like just hammered Ethan Piper, he comes out and just has the best block of the whole
exactly. He made the fucking football. ESPN fucking site. Oh, yeah. Okay. Show his other 86 plays.
I don't know. I heard somebody said, I don't know if it's Carrick or who, but they were saying how the offensive line is improving by the week. And I don't know that I'd necessarily agree with that. I think they've been pretty average
to terrible,
you know, borderline average at best.
Trying to touch average.
And they shouldn't even be a part of the discussion as much as we've been running the ball and not having a whole lot of success in the past game, because we just, you know, we had 107 passing yards last Saturday against Louisiana Tech. So Damn. We're not asking them to do a whole lot except just kind of throw their big bodies ahead and get in the way of the defensive linemen so we can run.
Get physical with a motherfucker. That's it.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Get physical. And I know
since that we're already, since we're talking grown. About all my slogans, you know, the good old fist fight in the phone booth, you know, I mean,
there it is. Hey, so. we're checking the boxes tonight. This is great. But
no,
Yeah.
Rhule looks like he's ready. Gonna fucking choke somebody. If he opens one more presser and the first question, what's the status of Jeff Sims? And then what's the status of Teddy Peroska? Like he looks like he's heard that question about one too many times where he's ready to go off on somebody.
And yeah, I heard a pretty funny comparison today too. It's like, I don't know that Rhule, I think deep down, you know, Rhule's going to like stand behind his decision to go and get his guy and Jeff Sims, quote unquote, his guy. But somebody made the comparison. It was like, you know, when you're in an airport and you're running late and usually you like eat clean, but you're on the clock, so you have to stop and get McDonald's. That's what Rhule had to do with acquiring Jeff Sims.
Yeah.
Because it was the quarterback
just grabbing something quick that go
just grabbing something. And, you know, it's kind of like a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. You know, you just have to like get something just because it's there and available and you need it. But I don't know that he necessarily got the best quality of what he was looking for.
Yeah. Well, so I mentioned, you know, how he maybe pictures Teddy Peroska as not a starter caliber player, which, you know, is fine. It's not like I mean, Teddy was fine, but he wasn't fucking great by any stretch of the imagination. You know, so every coach has got their guys, but, you know, we've pinpointed for sure which guy is Matt Rhule's guy, and that is Tommy Hill. I don't know if Rhule is Tommy Hill's, you know, long lost dad or what the relationship is, but Rhule clearly has an infatuation with Tommy Hill. I mean, he speaks glowingly of this guy. And Tommy Hill, you know, I mean, he should be a stud player, but every time he gets on the field, something bad happens. And we saw him get back there to return a kick and immediately fumble the kick, carrying it out there like a fucking loaf of bread. And I mean, just to tell you how much he loves him, when he's asked about it, you know, he's like, oh, you know, he's our version of Travis Hunter playing both ways. It's like,
oh my God.
Excuse me? And then he's like, oh man, yeah, I know he fumbled that on the kickoff, but man, he was gone if he didn't. It's like, he was gone if he didn't fumble. I mean, but he fumbled, you know, like let's focus on what actually happened here, Rhule. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'd be rich if I won the lottery.
Yeah, exactly. Tommy Hill is clearly his guy. So, you know, every coach's staff and every coach has those guys that, you know, they're going to give second and third and fourth chances to. And it sounds like Tommy Hill is that guy for Rhule. So, you know, stay tuned. You know, they put him out there to run, you know, go patterns, and it's like, dude, you have two track star wide receivers, freshmen, that have been looking to get on the field. It's like, let's, you know, put out Malachi Coleman out there to, you know, run a couple nine routes, you know, Lloyd out there. We saw him on an end around. It's like, you have two track wide receivers that, you know, you're trying to transition, because I think they're both just track stars that you're trying to transition into football players, you know, but he's going to rock with Tommy Hill, so... you know, back to Saturday, just kind of, you know, we had talked last week about the great slate of football on Saturday, and, you know, it really lived up to expectations, you know, across the board. You know, it started in the morning with the Florida State Clemson game. That was a hell of a game. Florida State ended up pulling it off in overtime at Clemson. So Clemson's now 500. So we've got the same record as Clemson, you know, old 2-2. You know, then the afternoon game, you know, said we maybe weren't going to talk about it, but, you know, the Colorado Oregon game was much anticipated. Then the nightcap with Notre Dame and Ohio State, which was kind of a boring game all the way, you know, up till the fourth quarter. Then, it got interesting in a fucking hurry, which I believe, was NBC's highest rated college football game in 25 years. So, you know, the ratings right now are through the roof for college football across the board. You know, everybody's talking about, well, the transfer portal and NIL and all this shit's going to hurt college football, but the ratings are through the roof. College football right now is at an all-time high entertainment value. And, you know, I wanted to kind of bring up this aspect of it is, you know, this last week we saw some, like, you know, we're getting a little WWE style here in college football. I mean, you know, obviously you've got Dion now, so that's going to, you know, going to get a lot of clicks and a lot of things going on. And then, you know, you got Ryan Day after the big win at Notre Dame, fucking, you know, putting Lou Holtz in a body bag. You got the Washington State head coach, you know, told Lee Corso he needs to go ahead and fucking retire. He doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. So, I mean, even old guys are out here catching smoke. I mean, a lot of people, I guess one of the big things, people were talking about Ryan Day's comments. And if you didn't hear him, he basically, Lou Holtz came out and said, you know, Ohio State isn't physical. And that's why they end up getting beat by the teams of, you know, Michigan, Georgia, et cetera, whatever. And so, you know, Ryan Day gets that nice walk-off touchdown at Notre Dame. And, you know, first thing he wants to say is, I can't believe Lou Holtz. I can't believe he would say that. It's always been Ohio versus the world. And, you know, for me, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I guess, what were your thoughts on that? I don't know if you saw the Washington State one. You know, fucking Lee Corso called it the Nobody Wants You Bowl because it's Washington State versus Oregon State, the two teams left in the Pac-12, which are two bona fide top 20 teams that are both really good, really good. You know, and Lee Corso called it the Nobody Wants Us Bowl. And he said, you know, basically took shot at that. And I mean, do you, I guess, what'd you like about Ryan Day's comments, or did you like them? And, you know, would you kind of like to see maybe Matt Rhule get involved in this? You know, you hear a lot of coaches out talking. I mean, last week you had Colorado State's piping up. Oregon's coach, you know, fucking put Colorado in the body bag. You know, these guys are out here for clicks. We're out here for wins. You know, Nebraska's always been kind of the Nebraska nice. And, you know, we've had a bunch of coaches and programs and players take shots at us in the past. I mean, you know, Iowa's kicker, Iowa's coach is taking shots at us. I guess, go back to Ryan Day's comments. What'd you think of them? And would you like your coach to be, you know, a little bit more fiery, or you kind of want him just to be, you know, kind of level headed?
I think it's funny that anybody is taking shots at Lou Holtz at this point.
Hey, old men can get it, man. Old men can get it.
I heard the clip of what Lou Holtz said. And I mean, you can say, yeah, that he called him not physical, which he did, but there was a lot more to it. There was a lot more butter on that bread, if you will. And that was obviously something that he picked out of the, you know, the soundbite and ran with it. And I think a lot of it really is motivating his players and his fans and his team.
Absolutely. You think his team and fans didn't love that Ohio versus the world shit? Like I was even like, yeah, Ohio versus everybody.
You know, it's kind of just rallying behind, you know, any sort of hate talk and just using that as like fuel for, you know, motivating your guys and getting the crowd all fired up. So I'm all for that. And I don't have
what'd you think of the Oregon hype video and, you know, Dan Lanning, Oregon's coach,
That was the one that I think was awesome because it was just so spot on. He was saying everything that every one of us right now at this point outside of the state of Colorado would say to our team going into a game against Colorado. And boy, I mean, I'm going to say it worked.
they came out there with something to prove.
Yeah, they came out there and had more points than they had yards in the first half. So I would say that the motivator worked there. I didn't see much of the Washington State one, but I'm assuming it's probably on the same level there. And yeah, I mean, the closest thing we've ever had to that as a head coach was Bo Pelini, but he was saying it about our own fans. So we've never really had anybody like that. I mean, Tom Osborne never spoke loud enough that you could hear him from the other side of the room. Frank Solich couldn't see over the pedestal. Yeah. You know,
What kind of coaching style do you like? Do you like you know, a rah-rah guy, or do you like a kind of business and, you know, not going to let his emotions, you know, get too high or get too low?
I'll use one word for that. And as long as he's this word, then I'm all good with it. And it's authentic. Like if it's not like PJ Fleck going out there and riling everybody up because he's had too much Adderall that day. Fine. But if it's a guy that's, you know, reserved, you know, when they're taking care of business and they're doing their thing and he's, a gentleman of the game of football, then that's fine. If you know, things get a little bit fiery and the refs are not doing their job and he has to get after them a little bit, I can appreciate that too. You know, a lot like kind of my style, my appreciation, it would be someone a lot like Fred Hoiberg. on the sidelines.
Okay.
That very reserved, very buttoned up, you know, focused on what he needs to do. But when things go sideways and the refs aren't doing their job, he gets after him too. And I've seen it, you know, firsthand. I'm a season ticket holder for Nebraska basketball, and I just really always have appreciated his presence on the sidelines there. So I know it's not football, but you know, that's the kind of like mentality and guy that I would get behind.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I guess for the most part, you know, I've usually had growing up and whatnot, kind of the coach that'll get in your ass and, you know, get on you a little bit more than they're not on you. And then, you know, couple that with a father that was also that way. You know, I guess I was just kind of ingrained to, you know, getting the ass chewed, you know. So I guess that's kind of usually how I respond to things. So, but, you know, everybody's got their style. But, you know, I loved what Ryan Day did. You know, he went out there and, you know, and I think, like you said, he wasn't really talking to Lou Holtz. He was talking to his fan base. And, you know, that Michigan, the 0-2 to Michigan thing is really – really looming large on him. I mean, I honestly think if he would have lost that game, you know, he was going to be on the hot seat, in which he still kind of is, which is absolutely crazy. You know, because you know, there's only one game up there at Ohio State, and that's the Michigan game. So, you know, losing two times in a row, and both times, you know, beaten pretty handily. I mean, in all honesty, you know, I thought Ohio State outplayed the national champion last year, Georgia, for the whole game, and you know, had a kicker that went out there and, you know, missed the kick to win the game. And, you know, they're one kick away from winning a national championship, basically. So, you know, high expectations, man. I mean, you know, I think Ryan Day's a great coach and I like what he did. I liked, you know, the Washington State guy. He's coming out. I mean, you know, it's kind of right what Lee Corso say. It's the nobody wants this bowl. The two teams left standing in the Pac-12 are two of the better teams in the country. They're both top 20 teams. So, Washington State and Oregon State, you know, both have good teams. And, you know, Wisconsin just went out there to Washington State, got beat for the second time in a row. So Washington State's got a good program. And, yeah, they're out there in kind of no man's land. But, you know, you got to stick up for your team, stick up for your fan base. And, you know, somebody takes a shot at you, you know, you got to let them know, you know, we ain't put up with this shit. So I love it. I love it. I love the WWE factor that's going on in college football right now. I think that's what's helping the ratings be so high currently. Ratings are at all-time high this season. And then, you know, they're doing the thing, you know, if the 12-team playoffs started today and they rattle off the teams and it's just blue blood after blue blood, it's, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, Georgia, Alabama, Notre Dame. It's the who's who of football. So go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
I think the last thing that's kind of missing from this season, like it's already been, you know, pretty entertaining. We're missing some upsets, you know, so I think that's the next shoe to drop for, you know, for this very entertaining season to keep going. But, you know, at the same time, I'm just thinking it's like, well, you know, with the transfer portal and everything, it's like, are the major upsets, you know, are maybe those the things that's going to suffer, you know, now that basically the top dogs can come snatch up your top players, you know, kind of how like European soccer is. So it's like, is that the one thing that's going to be missing? Because right now, entertainment value wise, it's, you know, it's at an all time high for me. So,
And I would say the last thing on the coaching thing too, as far as like, you know, taking shots and, you know, getting all fired up is, I think a lot that plays into, you know, seeing these little outbursts or whatever you want to call them is a recruiting aspect too, because these coaches know that they have recruits out there all over the country. They want to come play for a guy that's going to get behind them, get all fired up, get, you know, say these types of things, because, you know, it's about clout, you know, it's about making statements. It's about, you know, taking negative things that are said about you and your team and, you know, providing that, you know, family atmosphere when you join a program to be able to know that you have the coach that's coaching you, they're going to have your back.
Yeah.
And so, I think a lot of that, because, you know, the players, these recruits and stuff, they, you know, they go out on Friday night and they know they have to perform and they're, you know, they're currently in the limelight and spotlight and, you know, they want to get their offers and, you know, get their fair shot and shake at, you know, their own future. But it's no different for these Division I coaches, because
they continue to have to
like have that buy-in and show and, you know, do their own thing to win over these kids to come and play for them. Because if you're not getting these dogs and these players, we've seen it. It's not going to amount to wins.
You're going to be getting shit and getting going.
So, I think recruiting is a big aspect too.
Yeah, definitely. So, I love that part. So, we had some old faces, new places show up on Saturday. Our boy, Mr. NIL himself, one of the coldest names in college football, Dakotas Crawford, who, you know, a lot of people forgot that he transferred to Louisiana Tech. That's where he's from, that area or whatever. So he transferred back after that, you know, that A++++ NIL heating and cooling deal last year that now the polar bear is doing. But he played Saturday. You know what? He looked pretty good. He looked like a guy that we could use on our team right now. Unfortunately, he ended up helping us and sealed the game for Nebraska.
Yep.
Took a nice little slant route, ball right off the face mask, right through his hands, right off his face mask into Gifford's hands to seal up the game, where Nebraska was able to nail it out. But he probably had, you know, four or five catches, looked pretty good. I mean, he's got good size on him. It's kind of funny seeing him out there. But
I heard on the radio going into the game that he wasn't going to play. So when I saw him suited up, I was like, all right, so I guess we're going to see him. He'll probably go off for 150 on us and make us all feel stupid. But he did not do that. Smoke Harris was definitely the showcase player on their offense.
Yeah. Yep. So entertainment value of college football. Another thing, have you heard this? The road to 325. Have you heard this yet?
I don't think so.
Oh, this 325 is the amount of points that Iowa needs to score for Kurt Ferentz's boy to keep his fucking job. So
I did hear this.
Yes, Kurt Ferentz's son, the much aligned. What's his first name?
Brian.
Brian Ferentz, the much aligned offensive coordinator for Iowa. You know, Iowa fans have been after this guy for years now, and his offense looks like Nebraska's offense does this year, but it's looked that way for the prior 6 years. So Iowa fans are hot after this guy, and I guess he's got it in his contract that Iowa needs to average 25 points to keep his job, which, you know, kind of puts Kirk in a funny place. It's like he's clearly not going to average that. And so he's like, are you going to fire your boy? You know, I mean, that's tough to fire your son. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it is what it is. And so Iowa went out and you want to talk about bad offensive performances. Iowa went to the white out there in Happy Valley against Penn State, which Penn State's a goddamn good team, put up just abysmal performance. I think they had like 48 total yards, 2 first downs and 0 points. So the road to 325 got a little bit longer for Iowa. Did you see any of that game Saturday night?
I kind of had it on the background, but that's my second favorite stat of Saturday is I mentioned the Colorado not having as many yards as Oregon had points in the first half in their game. Iowa had less yards than Penn State had first downs in the first half of their
game. That ain't good. That ain't good.
I mean, those two stat lines are just incredible to me because you just don't see that ever. And the fact that it happened to the two teams that we might hate the most right now in Nebraska.
those are 1A for my most hated teams, like in Colorado and Iowa. I love to see those guys doing bad. So, Iowa went up to Happy Valley, the whiteout, obviously probably the most electric atmosphere in college football, you know, something I definitely have on my bucket list to get up there to see a whiteout. But, you know, Iowa got up there and just, you know, totally shit the bed, got nothing going all night. And Penn State ran it up on them. You know, I think, like I said, the prior couple episodes, we talked about this is one of Penn State's better teams. I think they're going to end up beating Ohio State, and then them and Michigan would be a real good game. But very, very dramatic drop off after the top three teams in the Big Ten. It's it's Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, and then Canyon. They could be undefeated, you know, the next team, but they're not on that same level as the other three.
Yeah, and they haven't really played anybody.
Yeah, but yeah, Maryland looks all right. You know, Tua's little brother out there slanging. So, but I guess, you know, another things that came out earlier today, finally, Nebraska's getting a little stadium renovation announced today. Going to be redoing, I believe, South Stadium. Is that correct? You know, I'm terrible with directions.
South Stadium. Yep. Oh, and not just South Stadium. Okay. But that's the main feature of this whole project. Yeah.
And they're what, putting a little party deck up there. Is that and they're moving the student section there?
So they're going to what they're going to do. So they're going to completely tear down the current South Stadium. Just do away with it. They can handle that. North Stadium, they can't do that just because of, like, I don't know, that I think that was like the first part of Memorial Stadium. And so, but yeah, I listened to Trev's press conference today. And so they're really just modernizing the whole stadium, which is long overdue. I think, you know, when we were at the game recently, a couple weeks ago, my wife was like, they need to do something with this. And then Jack Mitchell on Twitter was like, I'm looking forward to the point where I can be at a Nebraska game and I can look 8 feet away from me and not have to figure out a 5-minute route to get to that point in the stadium, because it's just, it's so like jumbled up. And so they're going to redo South Stadium. They're going to make it on the main level, or the ground level, a 360 experience. So you can just walk all the way around the field. Unlike today where you have to like go upstairs and then go down them. And then, you know, just kind of, it's like a maze. And then the upper deck level is going to be a 270 degree experience. So you can pretty much get from one edge of the north part of the end zone to the other edge of the north part of the end zone. They're going to do seat backs everywhere except north end zone, which is really going to be nice.
Yeah, they're lowering that. The
capacity is going down.
Capacity to what he said, 70 to 75?
It's like 75 to 80. They play in like all of the staff and like coaching and personnel and everything into the attendance, I think. So it's like 70 to 75 plus like another 5 with that. But then they're going to just add simple things like railings on the walkways. Because, you know, it's not really like handicap like friendly right now. And so that was a big focus. And they're also going to do it in like 4 different sections of the stadium, where like he said that they went to three different stadiums to get ideas. One was Wisconsin, because they just did a whole stadium or end zone part of their stadium renovation on their stadium. They went to Notre Dame, because Notre Dame's outside of like a game day Saturday, it's like basically like a business mall. I mean, they have like an academic section, they have like a community section, they have like a.
Did they use Colorado's as a, or Colorado or Iowa's too?
No, the third one was Chicago Cubs, because Chicago Cubs, Wrigley's so old and they went through all these renovations, they kind of just had to like mirror that. And so a lot of different like moving parts there, but yeah, it's more just a modernization. And he talked about how Nebraska's, game ticket is 4th in the country amongst everybody to get into a Nebraska football game. Yeah. He said he recognizes that. So I would expect also ticket prices to go down.
Well, you know, that's more of a fucking Ticketmaster and those, you know,
but like face value.
Ticketmaster is so bad. And these damn secondhand ticket places are so bad that the goddamn government's getting involved, you know, like it's made it all the way up to Congress of like, hey, brother, you got to stop tacking on all these fucking fees and service charges and all this crap. Like, you buy a $78 ticket, and by the time you check out, it's like, oh, I owe $138. It's like, what the fuck, man? So,
yeah, I don't think there's anything Trev can do about that, unfortunately. But, like, just the face value in general goes down, which hopefully brings that extra price down. But, yeah, I think it's long overdue, and especially as well as like Pinnacle Bank Arena has been received, and just the accessibility there. I think that was a lot of motivation. But
I know people are looking to, you know, purchase those horse troughs. You know, we've been having to piss in for years, you know, there at the stadium. So I've seen a lot of people, you know, trying to get those for the man caves and whatnot. You know, that's
They can have them. I'm not in the running there.
That's when a boy really becomes a man, when it's time to step up. You know, you're 10 years old and it's time to, you know, get your stuff out fucking in public and in a fucking line of other 50 people. It's it's every Nebraska man's rite of passage, you know, to deal with that shit. So
between that and the in the stalls where I've mixed hundreds of drinks in there, taking my little shooters with my stadium cup.
I think 70,000 is a good number. You know, I mean, I've been to some of these bigger stadiums. I've been to Ohio State. I've been to Michigan, and you know, when the time I went to Ohio State, I fucking sat way up top, but I sat right behind their goddamn big flagpole there, which you don't realize how big it is. I sat directly behind it, and I was literally having to lean my head taco neck style left and right to watch the game. And it's Ohio State Stadium is freaking huge. And then when I went to Michigan's, we actually got really good seats. So we're in the row two in the end zone. But you, when you come into the stadium, it's all it's not tiered. So you come in, you're at like row, I don't know, call it 120. Well, it's like now you got 118 fucking stairs you need to go down. So it was quite the process getting in and out of there. So I think, you know, 70,000 is more than sufficient.
I think that's like the cutoff for big time stadiums too, is like 70. Yeah. If you're below 70, it's like, okay.
I mean, that's basically what NFL stadiums are. Like NFL stadiums aren't fucking, you know, I think the Cowboys stadium is the only one that's really, you know, really big. Outside of that, you're in the, you know, the 50 to 60 range for most NFL stadiums.
I think that, I mean, they were the first domino to fall, because now these newer ones that they're coming out with, like Mercedes-Benz in Atlanta, I think it's up there quite a bit. And then even the new one in LA is pretty capacity heavy, but they also like designed that originally for like the Olympics. So
Olympics, World Cup and shit. So, but I don't know. I mean, it was obviously, like you said, it's long overdue. And hopefully that'll, it sounds like it's good. Well, not sounds like it's going to be under construction for next, for the 24 season. So things are going to be
cool. Not 24.
It's 25.
Yeah, 25.
They started next
year. Their goal is basically to have it torn up for one season.
Yeah.
But then Trev Alberts made the funny story, funny comment in his presser, which I can relate to very much. And he goes, "Guys, I'm giving you what we know now, but have any of you ever built a house? Because it doesn't always go that smooth. You know, they tell you you're going to be in May, and you're not in until February. So,
Yeah, you know that firsthand, don't you?
I do know that firsthand, and so I was like, "Yep, okay, golfers clap here. I can appreciate that."
Yep. So, well, you know, back to the business at hand here. Nebraska's got a big game coming up Saturday. Number 2 Michigan. Harbaugh comes to town. With, as I said, Taylor's preseason national champion. I guess what are you looking to see? I'm sure you're like me. You don't expect Nebraska to come away with a victory, but what are you looking to see as progress, or as, you know, I hate to do these moral victories, but, you know, when you're clearly outgunned, you're looking for little things that you can take away from the game and, you know, build upon for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're going to be outmatched. They're going to be bigger, stronger, faster, more physical, just better overall than us. I'd like to see us, you know, put up a good fight in the defensive run game like we have. You know, keep that trend going, because if you have something to hang your hat on, that's big for a defensive unit. So I think I'm looking for that. I'm not Blake Corum, he's going to do his thing, but if we can just, you know, keep them somewhat one-dimensional and keep pressure
on them. Try to limit the big plays.
I think that would be big. And on offense, you know, we haven't really, you know, been really fun to watch all year, but sticking true to the identity that we've given ourselves through the first four games, you know, we're clearly going to be a run-heavy team that's going to, you know, try and just wear you out, show your you know, your physicality throughout the first three quarters, because we've looked less gassed and we've looked more conditioned in the fourth quarter in every game we've played outside of maybe Colorado, but we were kind of getting beat down at that point.
Yeah, that was a mental fatigue. Yeah,
it was a mental thing. Yeah. And so just more of the same there. You know, if we can get out of there and keep it respectable and, you know, just have something that we can take away and get better.
Yeah, Rutgers hung with them last weekend. You know, Rutgers put up a good fight. You know, you're kind of looking for a performance similar to what Rutgers was able to do last week. You know, Vegas kind of tells you, you know, the real tale of the tape. They come in here 17, 18 point favor, however you're looking at it. But the real tell of the tape is the over under. The over under is 40. 30. Yeah, 39 now. 39 points. Jeez. So for that big a spread and the over under to only be 19, they're basically looking for Nebraska to score less than 10 points. Yeah. Which, you know, I think that's probably where I'm at. I'm probably in the 31-10 range, you know, something in that nature. You know, like I said, you want to come out of the game, you know, feeling like there's something you could build on. Like, hopefully the defense can get back to, you know, making their tackles, getting open field tackles, playing tough defense, Well, you know, now with these new clock rules, the game's already slowed down and limits possessions or whatever, which I'm not sure that I love. But, you know, you want to keep it close going into the second half is what I'm looking for, you know. And that's, you know, within 10 points or so. So you want to be able to try to run the ball and force your will on them, see if you can get anything outside of quarterback run going. Because Michigan's not going to let you quarterback run for any sort of real success, you know. So you're going to need to get somebody else involved. You know, we've talked about him all season. Fedoni is finally healthy and finally, you know, looking like the guy that, you know, we need him to be and want him to be. I mean, three touchdowns already. The last tight end we've had that had three touchdowns was fucking Mike McNeil, which.
Yeah, he's also got like eight catches, though.
Hey, you go Matt Harrion style. Remember, he had like eight catches, seven touchdowns, all for like over 40 yards.
Here's a baseball reference. It's like Giancarlo Stanton. The dude's either going to strike out or hit a 450 feet home run.
Yep.
Or I mean, that too. But you know,
AKA Mike Stanton.
No, I agree with you. It's like, you know, if we can get Fedoni up to, you know, a touchdown and five catches a game, you know, we can ease into that by the end of the year, we're cooking with, you know, some talent
peanut,
there. But
some
it's like,
peanut oil, I believe they say.
Yeah,
cooking peanut with oil. Peanut oil. Yeah. Yeah, that's good for you.
Yeah. But yeah, you'd love to see him just get some more catches. Just simple stuff. You know, you don't have to get too crazy with him. Just, you know, I always had good tight ends, you know, in high school and college, and it was just simple, like little search routes. You know, you send them 8 to 10 yards up the field, let them read where the linebackers are, stop in a spot, and you hit them.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, he's physical enough where he catches that in the middle. He can break a couple tackles and gets what they call a yak.
As a 49ers fan, I'm very well of the word yak.
They're
definitely the yak boys out there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's good to see Fedoni, you know, getting in the end zone and kind of getting his feet wet and staying healthy. But, you know, we got to get him a little bit more involved.
Yeah, got to get a little bit of everybody more involved outside of quarterback run game. So,
yeah, I mean, Billy Kemp, you know, he shows some, you know, flashes of electricity. But the guy's so small. I just, you know, I think the amount of touches he's had so far this year is probably good for him.
Yeah,
because, you know, he's one big hit away from being done with football. Yep. So
big game Friday, Michigan coming to town. It's the Bussin' with the Boys Bowl. Will Compton, Taylor Wan coming to town. Whole Barstool pregame show's coming to town. 92 degrees. You know, next week it's Hunt Saturday. It's a high of 52. So sounds like a very good day, great game day environment. You know, you got a big-time team coming in here. You got Barstool coming in town. So, Zach, naturally, I'm assuming you're going to be, you know, down there at the game enjoying the game all day Saturday. Is that correct?
I don't appreciate that you're asking this in that tone because you know damn well what I'm going to be doing.
Oh, shit.
Somebody broke the cardinal rule. Wedding number 2 of the fall. Wedding number – and I'll give him credit. He's a friend of ours, but he had the ceremony set for like 4:30 or 5 because I think everybody just knew and assumed that this was going to be an 11 a.m. kickoff.
Yep.
And boy, they did me dirty.
Misjudged that one.
Yeah. But I figure, you know, if things go like I assume they will, you know, it's a 2:30 kickoff. The ceremony's at 4:30. The game will be in hand by then. So I hate to say it, but if it's not, then I'm going to be a groomsman up there with my phone looking at the game.
And seen it before and you can't expect. Well, I mean, I don't know what they do on that side of the river, you know, but on this side of the river, you know, if you play during the game, then you should have
you get a free pass.
Expect everybody to have the phone in their hand. So
yep.
No, we're taking the whole family down to the game. Bringing my boy down there.
There you go.
So taking my boy Griff, his first game. My daughter Brooklyn, wife, and you know, grandma forked over a nice ticket. So
are there the ones real low?
Yep. Oh. Yep. Seventh row, 45 yard line. So we're gonna be sitting there prime. So I'm ready to, you know, have a good day out there, and you know, hopefully Nebraska can you know, at least what Dave Portnoy's shirt say, make Nebraska mediocre again.
Yep. And I'll take that. Mediocre, hey, shit. 6-6 and bowling.
Exactly. Fucking Dave, I hear you. No, it's not.
If we do it, I'll buy one of those shirts.
Absolutely. Fucking make Nebraska mediocre again. So, yeah, no, excited. It should be a pretty good crowd out there. So, you know, I might have to go check out, I believe, the Bussin' Boys there at the rooftop place. Having a brain fart.
Barry's?
At Barry's. Doing Friday night.
The Barstool pregame show is outside of PBA.
Yep. So this is Portnoy's first trip to Nebraska. So
and Big Cats.
Yep. So, you know, guys, we need to, you know, show up and show out. You know, fucking, you know, pregame, postgame, during the game, team needs to come out and look like they know what the fuck they're doing. So, big game atmosphere. So I'm hoping the boys show up. But I am liking Michigan to beat us pretty handily, 31-10, Wolverines, and, you know, Nebraska's season then moves on to, we got another odd game. We got a Friday night game, in Champaign next Friday night. So I think that game is really going to hinge a lot of what's left of the season. So, I'm excited to see, you know, see what these guys can do and, you know, go out there and make it look respectable and, you know, let's move on and try to get the rest of these. So,
you know, what's kind of crazy is, this just tells you like how good of a brand Nebraska and one, the Big Ten is. Obviously Big Ten SEC stand, much taller than everybody else, but,
right.
This is Nebraska's only been on BTN one time so far. And we're on Fox, obviously, against Michigan. We're on FS1 against Illinois. So
do we have
we're going to be halfway through the season and playing teams like Northern Illinois and Louisiana Tech. Only one of those was on BTN.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty, you know, telling as to like, you know,
yeah. Obviously I'd like Nebraska to see us on CBS. I love CBS's presentation, man.
They really do a good job. They have the best presentation, and their theme music is far and away the best.
Yeah, give me that CBS 2:30 window, you know. That's always it's always fucking prime.
Give it to us later in the year though, when it's like it starts as light out and then gets dark as the game goes on. That's ideal football right there.
All right, that's why I've always said, you know, the Rose Bowl, every big game should be played at the Rose Bowl. You know, it's so scenic. You know, started at that 4:30 time, you know, daylight during first half, second half, the sun's sunset. Going down in the mountain, San Gabriel Mountains, fourth quarter, it's fucking pitch black. It's like, you know, just, it's real big game atmosphere out there. So, that's it for today. You know, a little late on the pod this week, you know, fucking we have real lives to live. So, that's it.
For what it's worth, my prediction is 27-10. I think it's 27-3, and then one of those BS last-second touchdowns. Probably Brock Purdy, or not Brock Purdy. I would love for him to be on our team. But
hey, I just signed him to the fantasy team, so I'm hoping he...
Chubba Purdy runs one in late in the game to make it 27-10. But yeah. I think we still probably cover, just because it's, like you said, it's going to be such a low-scoring game, and the total is so low, but... It's not going to be that close.
Correct. So, all right. Well, till next week, you know, as always, go Big Red.
GBR.
This is the Big Red Revival.